Hey, I think we're all set. Everybody's here. First of all, let me wish you a warm welcome to this brand new boardroom of the IASB. I hope you will enjoy the building as much as we do. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us for this important meeting of this very important project. After 6 years in office, this is the first consultative group that I chair myself, which hopefully demonstrates that I personally and the board as a whole thinks that this project on improving and updating the management commentary is very important. Very important for the future of financial reporting in the broader sense. I will tell you a little bit more about how we see the project later on. But perhaps at this point it is good that we, many people have already met and know who you are, but perhaps it's good that we have a short introductory round. And let me give everybody the opportunity to introduce himself and where he's from, his background. Peter.
Peter Clark from the IASB staff.
Marie-Claire Tabone, IASB staff.
Liliana Franco from Erlikid, Paris.
Andreas Barco from the German Standard Setter.
Massimo Romano, Generali.
Vincent Papa, EFRAG.
Mike Tubby, Bank of America.
I just need to touch twice.
Rodrigo Alves, Petrobras. So
the camera.
Ryoko with Japanese about the best in London.
Larissa von Davidson, Macquarie.
Sandy Peters, CFA Institute.
Trent Klein, TELUS Corporation.
Eric Grabowski from the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board.
Alessandro Dei from the European Securities and Markets Authority.
Lisa French, International Integrated Reporting Council.
Jed Wrigley, 8 Roads, the proprietary investing arm of Fidelity International.
Ben Yeo, Royal Bank of Canada, the global asset management arm doing global equities.
Marie-Célère, Ayosco.
Mark Farson, KPMG and Accountancy Europe.
Chris Peach, Australian Accounting Standards Board.
Deepa Raval, Financial Reporting Council.
And Gary Kiprick, IASB board member.
Tom Scott, IASB.
Yukako Fujioka, Japan FSA.
Oswald Flores, IASB.
Ganderson, IASB.
Matt Chapman, IASB staff and technical expert for the project.
Jule Kegener, IASB staff.
And Hans Hogevorst, chair of the IASB. I'm surrounded by very capable staff here today, and quite a few of my board members, and I hope we can make this into a very productive meeting. We have a lot on our plate today, so let's kick off right away. Perhaps you can take a look at the first slide deck number one, introduction. Let me tell you a little bit about the background of this project. If you look at slide three, you can see two circles which partly overlap and which tell you a little bit about how we see this project. I've noticed that, well, first of all, it took me a long time to get my head around the question of what our role should be in all the discussions about wider corporate reporting. The first time I more or less succeeded in formulating where we stood was in a speech that I gave last year in at a meeting in Brussels called "The Times Are Changing," in which I made clear there are a lot of new developments in wider corporate reporting, and that there are some parts where we do have a role and other parts where we do not have a role. I've noticed that people get a bit nervous when the ISB starts talking about its role in wider corporate reporting, and everybody, most members of our advisory council told us, please stick to your guns, stick to what you're good at, which is financial reporting. And that is what we intend to do. But it's equally clear that While we think that we should stay focused on financially relevant information focused on the investor community and other financial market participants, there is a lot of financial relevant information out there which is not adequately captured in the financial statements, either because it's too much forward-looking, whereas the financial statements tend to be, not exclusively, but they tend to be backward-looking, or because it's more about intangibles, business model, the business environment in which you operate, economic developments, which are extremely relevant to the financial value creation of a company, but which are simply not adequately captured in the financial statements. And that is exactly why in 2010 we decided to develop a management practice statement on for a management commentary to give high-level guidance to companies, basically to write their annual report and to give this additional information which cannot be adequately captured in the financial statement. So in a sense, we are not doing anything new. And so the area in the middle between the two circles, in when we wrote our first management commentary practice statement, we called that other financial reporting. I think broader financial reporting is a better term. It's not wider corporate reporting in the broader sense, but broader financial reporting. And that is extremely relevant. What we cannot do is what you see in the green part to the right, which is parts of wider corporate reporting which are not primarily focused at investors and other financial and other market participants, which may be very legitimate and in itself, but which are perhaps more directed as the public good. What is a company contributing to make the planet a cleaner place, or which can have a if you, for example, have a company in the automobile industry succeeding in making your cars cleaner, will also have a contribution to your future value of your company. But what it does for the planet as a whole is not primarily what we should be focused on. So we embarked on this project already in 2010. And why is it that we now think it needs to be updated? And let me then turn over to slide 4. Which is basically that there have been a lot of new developments in wider corporate reporting, which we have not adequately captured in the practice statement as it is. Recent innovations like the integrated reporting framework, new developments in sustainability reporting, for example, the climate disclosures project. Initiated by the Financial Stability Board, which clearly also has a focus on investors and value creation in the future. The fact that what we witness is that there is inconsistent business model reporting that are seen even in the annual report, in the management commentary, this seems to be a short-term strategic focus in reporting rather than a longer-term focus on long-term value creation. Growing concerns generally within the investment community about short-termism in the capital markets. And these are all reasons which we believe make it important that we have a fresh look at the management commentary practice statement. So, we can discuss this later on. Let me first turn over to Julia. Shall we take a break for some general questions at this point?
Hmm? Perhaps it would be better if we have general question and discussion after we finish the introduction. And I'm going just to say a couple of words about how we are generally planning to run this project, and I'm turning to slide 5. So as a starting point, we are going to use our existing practice statement because it's all about making it better. So we're going to look at where it is incomplete and where more information needs to be added. We are going to look at where it is out of date and it needs to be updated. We are going to look at where it is unclear or insufficient and where it needs to be clarified. So this is our overall approach. Start with what we have today. Now, in revising the practice statement, we will be guided by the conceptual framework for financial reporting, which is as applicable to management commentary as it is applicable to general purpose financial statements, and which was recently revised by the board. So with respect to a conceptual framework, and if I could quickly jump to slide 11. So conceptual framework sets out the objective of general purpose financial reporting, and the objective is to provide useful information to investors, lenders, and creditors for their decision making. And conceptual framework also describes what makes information useful. It needs to be relevant, and it needs to provide faithful representation of economic phenomena. And then conceptual framework also discuss how the usefulness of information is going to be enhanced. Now, we think that all these characteristics of useful financial information are applicable to management commentary, and we expect that they will be featured in the revised practice statement. And what we would like to do today, we would like to focus at those aspects of usefulness of information which we think could be particularly challenging for management commentaries. So if you look at the ticks on slide 11, we would like to talk about objective in more detail, completeness and neutrality of information in management commentary, materiality, and also comparability of information. If you believe that there are any other particular topics that would apply throughout management commentaries, you know, other overarching principles that we should be thinking about, today is your opportunity to tell us about it, and either at the end of this first session or at the end of the day when we will be covering other topics. And then depending on how much time we have, we might either have further discussion today or we may bring it to a future meeting. Now going back to slide 5. So other than conceptual framework, we will also consult our recently issued materiality practice statement. And again, it would be as applicable to management commentary as general purpose financial statements. And finally, of course, we will consider emerging best practices and guidance and also common themes in broader financial reporting debate. And with that, I'm turning over to our technical expert on the project, Matt.
Thank you, Yulia. So we are very conscious that there are a number of very big themes in this area, but equally we're conscious that to be a success, the practice statement has to be something that can be operationalised, something that can be readily understood and clearly applied by preparers. So we want to sort of at this stage just give you the assurance that we are picking up the big themes, and we'll be picking up the big themes as we go along, both throughout today and throughout the next two streams of discussion that we're going to be having. But I just wanted to give you a little overview of where you're likely to see those themes crop up, so you can just sort of decide for yourselves whether you're comfortable, whether that's the right amount of emphasis, whether it's too much emphasis or too little. So this is a discussion we cover on slides 6 to 9. I'll run briefly down the themes and just highlight where we expect to meet them as we go through our discussion. So firstly, long-term value creation has attracted a lot of focus. something that we feel should be pervasive to the management commentary. We'll talk about that when we discuss the objectives for a management commentary. There's reference to whole life cash flows. We'll talk about it also in the context of objectives from a preparer's perspective, explaining the long-term strategy of the business. There are some pitfalls there. Long-term value creation, we're concerned, should not be an excuse for omitting short-term aspects of performance. But we do see that as potentially an extremely important area. Supporting that is the idea of resources and relationships. The capital is in integrated reporting terminology. When we come to look at the objectives for the management commentary, we'll talk about how a preparer potentially can identify the matters that it needs to report on in the context of those key resources and relationships that define the future success of the business. We'll also, in the third stream of our discussions, come on to talk about the more detailed application to the content elements of a management commentary, how a business model description can be built that addresses these key resources and relationships, and how the strategy discussion can be built around that. Business model focus features in a number of discussions in this area. We see that as being important in terms of both the way in which we set the principles for how the management commentary should be approached. So the idea of, you'll see the idea of linkage and narrative coherence, how the report gets built around the business model as a core focus rather than around a checklist of disclosures. We'll also cover it as a content element in its own right later on. Materiality is often regarded as being an area of concern. How do you apply materiality in the context of a set of numbers and narrative information that does not cannot have a consistent materiality threshold applied to it? So we'll address that specifically when we talk about materiality as a principle, but also within the objectives for the practice statement, we're setting out an objective which is very clearly focused on the future cash flows of the business. So no doubt we'll have some discussion around that. The importance of operational information on the business, and to be clear, that includes ESG type information where it is relevant to the future success of the business, but doesn't include it where it is not. But it would also include a broader set of measures, such as more mundane matters, such as whether the business is winning and retaining its customers, whether it's holding on to the key staff it needs for success. So potentially a very wide range of measures that are relevant to the specific circumstances of the business. And again, we'll come on in the third stream of our discussions to talk about how that can be set out as a content element for the management commentary, but we'll also see it throughout our discussions, I think, in terms of where information is relevant. And lastly, I just want to pick up on stewardship and culture, which is potentially a very broad topic area. We will need to think as we go through the discussions about where the boundary of management commentary ends and the boundary of a governance statement starts, for example. But there is no doubt that a lot of people are looking to management commentary to provide insight into the overall stewardship of the business in the context of meeting the needs of the owners of the business. So we'll see that, and potentially we have some references to the impacts the business has on its wider stakeholders that broadens the discussion of stewardship from something that is quite narrow to something that is addressing stewardship for the success of the business, but in the context of wider society. So I just wanted to give you that little overview of where some of the big themes are likely to come up. And I think rather than having them as individual points of discussion, they're things that we'll keep coming back to as we discuss the different elements of the practice statement. In terms of our discussion structure for the three series of meetings we're planning for the practice statement, and this is just covered on slide 10 in overview. Today is all about objectives and principles for the management commentary. That is important to us for two reasons. One is it gives us insight into how we write that section of the practice statement, but equally it's important for us when we think about the detailed content elements of the management commentary, because it sets a basis for how we can approach those consistent with the overarching principles. And we'll come on to those content elements in streams two and three of our discussion. So two goals really for today is setting out, getting a good understanding of the objectives and principles for the front of the practice statement, but then setting a direction for where we go in terms of the thoughts around the detailed content elements. So with that, I think we can open it up to questions.
Questions and comments? Ben?
I guess three quick comments and questions. One is on that slide 11, just the things in the tick. I did think verifiability is something which comes up. So a quick example is if a CEO says, employees are my most important asset, they write something in the narrative and they say, my employee engagement is really high or trending up, then I as an investor would sometimes like to challenge them on that. You know, is that really true or not? And if there was some way, whether it was an audit or something, can say, oh, you know, we check that and we can say that has some degree of verifiability, then that's useful information to me. Otherwise, I'll be checking it from third-party sources. So some elements, I think, of that narrative, if it were to be able to be verifiable, would actually increase that in importance. And actually, that's something that investors were always trying to check, whether we think management are kind of putting a wash over something or it's something very genuine. The second one, which is perhaps a little bit harder and comes into some of the stream, I guess sometimes comes under this long-term strategy, but there's a lot of debate, I think, within investors and the wider circle about what something might come under, I guess, the idea or notion of purpose. And this comes under stewardship and culture and all of these things. And where purpose is important for the business or business model and refers to, you know, the long-term cash flow streams, I do think that is very interesting information for investors. And again, we would then question whether, you know, is this just a statement or is this true to the business model? Or if you don't want to or don't think articulating purpose, which might, again, I'll come on to the terminology, in terms of long-term strategy is not important to you, then actually that's quite interesting information for us as well. And again, as that sort of long-term narrative theme, that's something which often doesn't come in report and accounts. In the narrative bit, which I think I'm often asking management, so I think we're very interested in. And then the third point, which flows through this, is a lot. I think there's still a lot of work to be done, and I don't know whether this is the form which will clear us up on terminology. And it kind of already came on with purpose, because some people would say, well, is purpose not just long-term strategy and long-term strategy and purpose? And you know, where does that fit in the hierarchy? And I know later on those linkages, I think, are quite an interesting way of doing that. But purpose might actually sit beyond long-term strategy. So my purpose is to improve human health, but I'm going to create the best red widget in order to fulfill my purpose of human health. The red widget is this long-term strategy part, but the human health actually fits on the purpose part, which then we can stress test with management. And I think, because you mentioned it in the beginning, I think it's really important that aspect of materiality and then all of this other information, which you put under the heading of intangibles, which is a word I like. But actually, a lot of other people I hear refer to the same, I'm just going to call it blob of information with these different buckets. You could call it intangibles. Sometimes you call it ESG. I've now heard extra financial. I've heard pre-financial. I've heard non-financial, which I don't like because that suggests that it's not material. And all of those terms, when you actually look at something and actually look at it, oh, that was your employee turnover rate. Well, actually, that actual factor comes under all of those type of headings and some clarity of that. Whereas if you tell me, am I interested in what your employee turnover rate, I think all investors are actually interested in that. So I don't know whether that can be clarified, but I then coming back to something you said, that materiality being entity specific is really important to us. So employee turnover rate, yes, that's probably important for all companies and businesses. But maybe something like water stress would be really important if you had manufacturing in sub-Saharan Africa, maybe less important if you are a media company based in London. So, you know, there might be a level of hygiene reporting elsewhere in that, but I wouldn't expect water stress to come up in narrative reporting for the media company, where I would expect it to come into the manufacturing in that. And I think some of the guidance and things about that and how they and how corporates think about it would be useful, because often that information is missing or goes the other way. So I get the non-material stuff, which I'm not that interested in, and I have to skip over it, and is that not interesting? And then the material stuff, which I would expect to appear, for some reason is missing, and I'm having to go to other places or ask management about that.
Thank you, Ben. Deepa.
Thank you. So my first comment is just around communication principles. So overall, I'm very supportive of the approach that's been put forward here. The piece that's missing from me here in terms of the overall picture is whether we need something separate on communication principles. So we've got coherence, we've got slide 11, but particularly with narrative, I think it's very important that we emphasise the role of clear and concise communication in reporting and make sure that the front half doesn't become cluttered. So that was one thought. And the second thought was just a word of caution on sustainability reporting. So overall, absolutely supportive of the idea that you integrate non-financial sustainability matters to the extent they're relevant for investors and affect long-term financial performance. I think that term, there's no perfect term for it, but it needs to be very carefully defined in the practice statement, because you could get a whole lot of other stakeholders coming up and expecting more from this front end.
Okay. Can I just clarify on your clutter comment? When you talk about communications principles, are you thinking in terms of just emphasising conciseness and decluttering, or are you looking at something that's broader that covers sort of the way in which you present numbers and emphasis and sort of broader questions like that?
Yeah. I was thinking of it in a more broader sense, so picking up on things like conciseness, but also linkage, coherence. How do you present information in a way that it picks up the key messages, so the whole picture?
Okay, good. Thank you. Massimo?
Well, first of all, I think it's very important what Anne said about the scope, because at least in Europe, there is a great curiosity of ISB positioning in this area, especially considering the non-financial disclosure evolution. So I would suggest to be very clear on your positioning on this area. This is my first comment. The second comment is on the terminology somehow, and on slide 8, I found a little bit difficult for me the operational information. So this terminology is not clear to me. So I would suggest to think about this terminology, because here we are really in the, as Ben said, in the pre-financial ESG information. So instead of adding a new terminology, I would take a position on the current status, or at least be very clear on that, because this is not really clear to me. Then, on slide 11, I want to take the deeper comment on the understandability. because I think, based on my experience, the use, for instance, of infographic in the management commentary, it's a terrific tool to improve the effectiveness of the communication. So I think you should take a position on that, reinforcing this element, because it's not just effective communication, but is also a very powerful tool for technical discussion, for instance, in terms of auditing the process of this information. This is about communication. And finally, I think connectivity, which is not in the framework, but connectivity, to me, it's a very relevant point, because here, the management commentary, you are sort of border, you know, between financial and other stuff. So if you can think about the connectivity issue, so how you connect the different capitals, for instance, if I mention the IRC or the core and more concept, would be very, very useful to help preparers and user to elaborate on that.
Are you thinking of connectivity in terms of going outside the bounds of the management commentary, or just within the management commentary?
Well, I see connectivity here as a bridge between your scope and the other universes. And a general principle to connect the different reports, the different capitals, something like that, you know.
Andreas.
Thank you. I generally agree with your layout and the suggested course of action. A few comments nonetheless. I think one principle that I believe is important is scalability. Because if you set out principles, somehow we need to distinguish between big companies, small companies, diverse companies, companies only with a very narrow business model. And obviously, they would probably equally apply the breakfast statement, yet probably to very different degrees. So I think stressing that not all principles might apply equally to each company, and some are more important than others, is an important element, I think, in order not to end up with boilerplate information. What I would suggest is probably making clearer where in your eight areas of narrative reporting you would cover risks and opportunities, because I think risk reporting is one of the key elements that I see in management commentary. I found it hidden somewhere in operational information. I'm not sure whether it was there. At least that's where the word risks appeared. But I would probably make it more visible and bring it to the front. Two further comments I would have where I'm not sure whether you want this to be discussed. One is obviously on the status of the document. So this is about objective and about the principles or the concepts. But I think there is an overarching question as to what should be the status of that document. You came from a practice statement. On the other hand, the remainder of the literature is really mandatory. And the question is, should this stay the way? Should there be a long-term view towards making it, in the end, at some stage, mandatory, but probably with some interim steps? And I think that would be a question for me that would be quite important. And my last comment would then be, you discuss the what to report and how to report, but I think what is equally missing is the where to report. Because I think, as I see it, we still discuss a report, and I think most people actually do have a printed book in mind. And the question is that really appropriate when the rest of the world thinks about digital reporting and going electronic? And I think that is a very important piece, because then you touch about the boundary question and you touch upon other sorts of communication and even communication of non-financial information that's being provided outside of the core financial arena.
Could I just clarify on your risk point?
Yes.
So, what we have envisaged at the moment is risk as being a part of the content element for the when the operational performance of the business is discussed. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that needs to be brought up as a principle and given a higher profile, or is it just the way we're presenting it in this deck that's not giving it enough emphasis?
Maybe both, actually. I just feel that if I look at management commentaries, really, there is usually a section about risk reporting. And this is why I think it should probably be elevated. My first concern was, is it really covered? And I know it is covered, and that's the more important bit. Whether you want to elevate it or not is then a matter of taste, I think.
Thank you.
Michael?
Yeah. I just want to come back to Deepa's point about conciseness, because I think at Bank of America, we've spent a lot of time eliminating disclosures that we think are not helpful, not useful, that just repeat information. So I do think it's something fundamental. And, you know, I think the other thing on the back of that, which captures a couple of points here, is just from a personal perspective, I have two kids that are millennials and two in Gen Z. And, you know, they want everything in, like, text. And Massimo's comment on infographics, I mean, I would tell you all that if you took a group of 20-year-olds from the London School of Economics and told them, we want you to rebuild financial report, tell us how you want it to be, we would see something that would probably really blow our minds. And, you know, I think this group owes it to this future generation of investors to really think outside of the box about what information needs to be.
Bring your kids along.
If you'll pay for the trip, Hans, they will come. But I do think it is really fundamental, and I like this idea of conciseness. I like this idea of infographics. I like the idea of how will this notion of a report, again, where I go on the Bank of America website and we have so much information there. The annual report is there, but we have ESG reports. We talk about our vision and our strategy, all kinds of people dimensions. And there is so much out there. I think, I wonder the principles here that we develop, I think they'll be great principles. And so the idea is should they only be applicable to this thing that we think about, this antiquated notion of an annual report, or do they apply to earnings releases? Do they apply to the way that we communicate as preparers information on a website, which by and large is probably the most common format of investors that want to know what's going on, of finding out what's going on in an enterprise? They're going to there first, and then they might open the annual report to get additional information. So I think it's important that we think about, you know, whether it's bridges, connectivity, where to report, that we think about that cohesively.
Liliane?
Yes, thank you. I come from environment where the report or the management report is a very strongly put it in the law. What I mean is that when you are reflecting on that and what you are explaining, that is a very interesting exercise. I have some reaction on that as preparer. The first of that is the governance. What I mean by governance is who is issuing the reporting. How is the governance structure of the company? How are you dealing with your risk? Who is speaking to the investors? What is the? Because there is a lot of definitions about report, or there a lot of ideas about report, but what we mean, at least our experience, the report is something issued by the top management, by the company the management engaging the company. That is my first reflection. The second one is the long-term value creation. It's a very difficult concept to capture. And I'm not sure that this, we can reduce that to the prospect of the future net cash inflow. For a prepared start point, the prospect of future net cash inflow is a matter of the investor. What I'm providing is all the information that I had in my hands without breaching any law or putting myself in a concurrential risk. But the long-term value creation is more easily captured through two aspects, the business model, and in the business model, when you were talking about business model, what is lacking is the cycle of life of the business model, because you have a different time where the cycle of the business model is accomplished. And the second, and I agree with the former speakers, is the risk and how you are governing and managing the risk.
Vincent.
Just a few comments and a couple of clarification questions. I'd back the idea of risk being a higher order principle. I think that would be consistent with the current practice statement when you mentioned resources, risks, and relationships. I would also agree with the points that have been made around the coherence principle. I guess linkage is the same principle. So the focus currently is of these as shaping content areas, but I believe it should also shape the communication. I was expecting there would be some exploration of the role of technology as well, I think consistent with the comments that Michael's just made. So how that have a role within the management commentary practice statement. Sustainability reporting, I think it would be helpful to provide some clarity on what falls under broader financial reporting market. So as you mentioned, there are distinctive goals sometimes that are being pursued by different audiences, but it would be helpful perhaps just to be a bit more specific on what falls under the broader financial reporting and the various investor-oriented frameworks which try to accomplish this. So maybe that could be a reference point for you. So when you look at the SASB, for example, or the Financial Stability Board climate disclosures, they're more investor-oriented, whereas GRI has more of a broader objective. So I think they could help in the articulation of differences that may exist. Then my questions would be on slide 10. So we do have a couple of topics which we're going to explore in streams 2 and 3. I was just trying to get a sense of how you come to these four topics and whether these topics are cast in stone. So you've had this exercise of reaching out to national standard setters and getting a sense of existing requirements. But I think some explanation of how you get to the four topics would be useful. And the final question would be on the slide 11. So the notion of neutrality, you've mentioned the applicability of the conceptual framework. The conceptual framework makes reference to the notion of prudence as well. Is that applicable to the management commentary practice statement?
So I think just picking up on your last two questions then, firstly, in terms of the four content elements, they are broadly what is described in the current practice statement, and I think when we looked at other frameworks, that was a good way of summarising the content component of those frameworks. However, having said that, we've already heard that there's several people here who feel risk needs more emphasis. If there are comments on areas that you feel should be explicitly addressed, then those are very welcome, because it's not set in stone. And then picking up the point on prudence, I think there's a good sort of question there in terms of whether that is something that should be addressed up front as a principle, and how that should be applied in the context of a management commentary. We come up on some areas where it's relevant later in today's discussion, for example, whether it, presenting different ranges of measures could create a biased view, an over-optimistic view, perhaps, but question whether we should go further than that.
And maybe if I just add a couple of words.
But let's not, I would hope we will not have a prudence discussion in this group. I mean, we had a lengthy discussions about it in the genesis of the new conceptual framework. It is not a fundamental characteristic of the, we didn't put it in the conceptual framework as a fundamental characteristic of financial reporting, but as a support for neutrality. So I don't think we already have so much on our plate, and when I hear the discussion around the table, it will be very hard to narrow it down. So I don't think that we should go there, to tell you the truth. Mark.
Yeah. Thank you. Let me first also say just a general comment. Very pleased to see that we are actually discussing it. I think it is important that the ISB takes this project on, because we're really talking about this from a capital markets perspective. I would echo actually what Andreas is saying. We all understand that the practice statement has a voluntary nature, but I think it may be useful to at least put some aspiration or some vision in the front end as to how you could see that this develops. And I'm very pleased to see also the regulatory community as observers here. And I think they will play an important role going forward in seeing how we can also let this practice statement land in practice. So maybe up front there may be something that you could do in the setup.
Something on the long-term value of the practice statement.
Here you go. I think I understand the scoping that you have done. I mean, I think it makes sense from the mandate that the ISB have to say, you know, we're in the middle, but still within the kind of the broader reporting related to financial reporting. But I would echo what Massimo was saying. I think I think it is useful to kind of make that linkage somewhere and to explain how it links with more detailed reports, and maybe also what Vincent was saying, to clarify where the more detailed report play a role and where this practice statement links with this more detailed report, or at least, you know, what our thinking is on how these could be linked. And yeah, I was with the Council of Europe, and so we had this idea of core and more, so at least to make sure that, you know, if you have more detailed reports, that somehow you make it understandable for users how all these reports link, rather than just let, you know, all these reports stand on its own. So I think if the ISB somehow in this project could at least, you know, put some explanatory words on how these two concepts link, I think that would be useful. And I think that also then immediately brings in the discussion of technology and how technology can help in achieving that. And further, and then I'm going to stop, but I think also the comments made about risk reporting, I would fully subscribe. I think that's important, and maybe elevated indeed.
Chris?
Thanks. So echoing quite a few of the things that we've already heard. So one thing as an accounting standard setter, the boundary is going to be really important, because it's going to determine who's actually going to be responsible in different jurisdictions for actually trying to bring this in. So echoing, do think voluntary to start with, but I do think we need to set it up so that it could be mandatory. And then also picking up on Ben's point about verifiability, I actually think that's going to be quite critical, because whilst it might not need to be audited at the moment, I think if we don't put it in place that it can be audited, I think we will have missed a great opportunity. Because I do think that this is going to be the fundamentally important piece of information going forward, not just the financial statements. So if I looked on slide 11, I would actually tick every single piece of the framework, because I do think it's actually really critical. And I'd also pick up, I think, with Michael's point, I think it is really important that we set this framework so that it can apply to other things. Because I think, for me, that's what, when I talk to people, that's what's missing. People don't, and it's that linkage theme and coherence theme, but if we set up this document in the right way, it should be easy for people to say, okay, right, we can apply this framework across many different types of reports. And this particular management commentary is just, I guess, what I'd call the plug-and-play concept. This is the first piece, and then you can bring in other things as you decide that they're important and they need to be brought through. So I'm very, very supportive of this project. I think this is absolutely critical for us going forward as accountants. If we don't get this right, we're going to be completely left out in terms of where the future of financial reporting actually goes. I'm also very supportive of thinking about things like purpose. So if I come back to, again, what I think this is all about, it's telling a story. So why am I here as a company? What do I actually want to do? How did I decide that I actually want to put that into play? And then what have I actually done this year that actually tells me how I'm going against those objectives? And I think if we can come back to those sort of basics, then I think we're going to end up with a good outcome. And I think that's what your themes are trying to do, but I just got a bit lost when we came to the content as to how they actually translated into that. And I think risk is going to be incredibly important, because that's going to be one of the key things that is going to let us know whether or not you can actually achieve those things. So what's your strategy for managing? So that would be, again, very supportive of that. And just lastly, I think just pulling it together is going to be really, really useful. And I do think it is that boundary piece and the connectivity with the financial statement. So I wouldn't want this to be seen as, again, a really separate report. It almost needs to be integral. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not quite sure that that's coming out at the moment. It seems like it's still meant to be something completely separate.
From
the financial statements themselves. Because I think if you come back to your boundary, you're saying, okay, we want to bring in anything that's going to have potentially an impact on financial statements in the future, or a financial outcome in the future. That seems to be the boundary that we're trying to work to here. It's got to have some connection with future prospects, future cash flows. And even that could actually be too broad. But if you sort of start with that, then it's, well, how does what you've got in this front piece actually tie in with what's in the actual financial statements? And that always seems to be the bit that's missing. It's a straight regurgitation of what's in the financial statements. It's not taking it further. I'm not an investor, but I'm pretty sure you guys could explain that better than what I'm doing. And I'll leave it at that. But very supportive of the project.
Jed.
I'm obviously supportive of the project too, otherwise I guess I wouldn't be here. And I agree with a lot of what Chris said. You know, this is a really important project. I'd say analysts probably spend 70% of their time on the segmental reporting and the management commentary, because that's where they get the most colour when they're thinking about how they're going to forecast the business going forward. I was actually going to comment more and link how I'd expect to use it to, you know, how you're planning to run the project. And I was a little bit surprised to see that it was stream three where you were going to start thinking about business model. Because I'd actually think, if I was thinking about how to come at this logically, I'd start from, well, what is the purpose of the business? How am I going to execute my business model to deliver against that? How am I going to preserve my economic moats? What are the key metrics of success? And I always think of it as a sort of very expanded DuPont-type framework, where I start with, you know, how am I going to generate customers? How am I going to deliver against them? The requirements that my customers have, how am I going to avoid churn, then how am I going to deliver it, you know, how am I going to keep my staff, how am I going to incentivize them, and what are the metrics I'm monitoring to check staff happiness. So there's loads and loads of data you need up front to understand the business model, and then the tools and KPIs you use to monitor how you're doing against that business model. And to me, those are sort of both in stream three and how you manage risk. And to be honest, a lot of that then flows into, well, given that DuPont framework, revenue then drops out of that. So then I'm looking at my current year financial analysis that then links me through to the annual report. And obviously you need layers of granularity depending on how many business models you have within your corporation. And forward-looking statements then sort of flow, you know, from the end of that where you start setting objectives for some of those KPIs. So I'd have liked to see it sort of to approach this from the perspective of, if I was analysing a business from day one or trying to manage the business and report to my own board about how I'm performing, I'd prefer to have seen it sequenced in that way.
I, actually, just to be clear, I mean, the expectation is that is how the report would be built. It's just we felt it was preferable to time the discussion differently, but maybe that was not logical.
Can you put up your markers in such a way that I don't know all your names yet?
I guess I call in that case. Thank you very much. So I think we really like the way the project is going, and I think it's, as all of us, it's a key project. The scope, I think, is correct, and I think the way you try to make the link with other recent projects of the ISB, such as the conceptual framework, the materiality, is something which is really relevant, so thank you very much for that. I will reiterate some comments already made by others. The link with the risk, I think it's something which is key for regulators, and the link with other elements of the financial communication and the accounts, because even if it's something different, I mean, at the end, all is about financial communication, so you cannot speak a lot about something in your management report and do not have something which is might be symmetric or not symmetric, but have something in your account as well. You have to have a link between all that. IT is also key, and the fact that today people do not look, as it was said, at just the accounts of the management report, but they globally look at the financial communication and maybe sometimes do not even know where this information is coming from and what at the beginning. So it's something I think we should also discuss. And I have one question is, unless I'm mistaken, I think the management commentary we have today is not so used in a lot of countries. And do you further explore why? I do understand it have to be updated and there is some hole, but did you discuss further with some preparers and some to better understand if it's because it was maybe too broad, because it was not with enough example, with enough guidance, so that we can make sure that what we will do will be more helpful?
Mm-hmm. That's a fair point.
Lisa. Yes, thank you. So I have, I'm going to touch on four areas here. One would be terminology. The second is going to touch on the disclosure and reporting principles. The third, value creation, in particular, longer-term value creation. And the fourth would be the link to governance reporting. So in terms of terminology, I actually think that the word operational neatly sidesteps some of this, you know, non-financial, pre-financial, extra-financial. I think it I don't think we find any of that terminology particularly attractive. So I think operational would be a good move there. I would express some caution around the terminology of impacts and sustainability. I think that both of those words actually have quite specific meaning within the ESG community, and so you could encounter some potential pitfalls with those words. Mm. And so it would be very important to clarify the spirit and intent of either of those words should they be used. On the reporting principles, I'm going to echo comments raised by a number of people, in particular Deepa and Massimo, on the coherence piece. I would make a plug for connectivity, and I think that that is something that in either, you know, in all of the comments thus far, connectivity has been a recurrent word, recognizing that both amount to the same end, coherence, connected. Matt, to your question earlier in terms of connectivity, where do you mean within the management commentary? I mean within the management commentary, but I should also think that secondarily, connectivity to other disclosures would also be desirable and logical. So on these reporting principles, things like conciseness, balance, and connectivity or coherence. The third comment concerns value creation. I noticed that it was a challenge to be managed in terms of, you know, will this encourage companies or will this discourage companies from reporting on the shorter term? I should not think that a consideration of longer-term value creation would preclude short-term or disclosures about the short-term. After all, value creation, it's all part of a continuum. So I don't personally see that as being a great challenge. But there would be ways through the guidance then, accompanying guidance, to manage that challenge. I do think that the guidance should point to the connection between stewardship of economic resources and value creation or erosion for others, including customers, including employees, supply chain partners, and the broader society. And I think that the linkage between that stewardship and longer-term value creation, the logical linkage points would be strategy and business model viability. Finally, the link to governance reporting. I did notice that as one of the points under stewardship and culture. I would think the conceptual framework already does include, in paragraph IN6, those charged with governance or members of governing bodies as part of management. So I would think that there's already sort of a logical connection there to governance reporting. Thank you.
Alessandro.
Three comments. One on verifiability. I agree very much with what has been said. I think one important perspective of considering verifiability is that it brings into the framework here also the principles that are in the conceptual framework as regards to disclosure of underlying assumptions, methods for compiling information, and so all the supporting material that is used to present the information, especially the quantitative information when it comes to KPIs. A second point on the long-term value creation. I think one aspect that is important to consider is also the overall consistency with the narration in different communication streams that the companies have towards the public. So, for example, in investor presentations, I think you captured this later on in one of the slide decks, but just want to highlight the importance of the management commentary being consistent with other types of communications that are delivered to the market by for example, during investor days. And one last point on the scope. I think I fully appreciate the caution with which you are setting the scope of this project. Perhaps it would be useful as an ex post exercise once a few of those discussions have been completed to see what is the residual area that has not been addressed, just to make sure that the important parts of management commentaries that are required to be disclosed today, I think about impact of certain matters, are or are not covered, because that opens up the question as to whether this residual area may be treated as a sort of compliance exercise by companies, because, say, 90% of the management commentary statement covers what is required, but then a small portion is not covered by this statement for the reasons set out in the in slide 3. And this may result in having a sort of check the box or checklist approach to a certain number of information. And just perhaps one last point on the link with other project. I appreciate the link with the conceptual framework, with the materiality practice statement. I think it would also be important to keep a link with the primary financial statements project when it comes to management performance measures, because principles that will be set in that project for the fair presentation of those measures should not be widely different from principles for presentation of KPIs in this project. Thanks.
Larissa.
Four quick points. The first one is that, in my view, the management commentary is as important as the numbers, if not more so, because it provides the context within which to read them. And the fact that it's not mandatory and not audited, I think is very unfortunate, and would love to see that changed. That said, I cannot echo enough Deepa's and Mike's comments on conciseness. Management commentary, integrated reporting has been mandatory in South Africa for several decades now, and the truth of the matter is that there's really interesting information in there that I generally don't get to because nobody has the time to wade through 500 pages of waffle. And unfortunately, I find that that is often the case. I find that management teams go on ad nauseum about things that they want investors to know and not the things that investors necessarily want to, or they want investors to know, not the things that investors need to know. And then also, Deepa mentioned duplication. It is, I think, very unfortunate that integrated reporting comes later often and that a lot of it is simply regurgitation of the financial statements. I don't think anybody has the time. Third point is on timeliness and comparability. So in a perfect world, I would like to see the integrated reporting or the management commentary at least with the financial statements, because the reality is that if it comes too long after the fact, everybody, the market has reacted on the information anyway. I'm in the analyst community, and you react on the day, and you have discussions max a week later, and then everybody moves on. So it's not helpful if you get a 400-page bookstore stop a month later. Also, comparability. Often we find that in financial reporting, well, in South Africa certainly, there's really interesting information that they'll give 1 year and not the next. So tracking things over time and actually understanding the trend becomes very difficult. Somebody mentioned management compensation and KPIs. I think that is particularly relevant. And then the last one, I have to smile on risk reporting. I absolutely acknowledge the importance. But what I find is that my companies will publish pages on level 1, 2, and 3 financial instruments when the truth is that 90% of what they hold is cash and listed instruments. And not mention at all what their hedging strategies are or where they think there is operational risk. And I think that would be extremely helpful as users because as analysts, the financial statements are the beginning of our analysis, not the end. And at the moment, I think that the rules are flipped. And I find too many management teams that hide behind it's not required. And I think that's unfortunate, and I think we can change that.
Rioka?
Thank you. I have a quick point. So when I'm looking at the point on the page 6, I think it's a summary to the concept and summary to the context and summary to how to write. So I think when writing or when providing the new statement, we should recognize which is related to which, the context or concept, basic concept to be shared, or which is we need to consider to help the prepared to use very effectively. The second point is risk and opportunity. So I think Matt says that it relates to the operational information, but I think it relates to other aspects. For example, so when we're looking for the company stewardship, for example, the company with a very strong, powerful CEO who is serving for a long time, I think the stewardship itself is very risky for the long-term success of the company. The investors or users of the information should recognize the risk of the stewardship as well for the from the view of the long-term success of the company. So it's the second point. And also about the long-term value creation and the stewardship culture, these ideas are very vague as a nature. So I think it will be very difficult for the company to write clearly, but they have to show the quality to be checked by the investors, by the users of the company information. So I think we have to recognize the difficulty when revising and developing the new statement. So I think it will be helpful to the company to prepare the more deep information when writing the. So also, finally, I think the last thing related to the sustainability information, it is one of the very important point, but I think when I'm looking at the Japanese company, they, when we talk about the sustainability information, they are only thinking about ESG information or CSR information. But I think there is a gap between investors and companies, and I think investors want to know the relationship or the connection to the long-term success or strategy and ESG risks. But I think there is some gap. So I hope when writing the new guideline or new document, we will recognize the differences or gap between the investors and companies about ESG and sustainability success. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Trent.
Lots of good comments and big learning experience for me to listen to everybody's views. Just a couple of quick comments. One, to echo Andreas's comment about risks, we probably spend a third of our space in our management discussion analysis on risk. And that's really driven from a legal liability perspective, but it's a big, big deal. More to approach on the project, I think we have to be very practical in what we do. I know there's a lot of wants here, but wants versus needs. I think you mentioned about integrated reporting. In North America, we have to file our management discussion and analysis concurrent with our financial statements. So we don't have 6 months. We basically have 35 days to put it together. So that's a constraint that I have to live with, and I would like to add into the mix.
Very good comments. We should also use language that management understands.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we may forget that sometimes. Sandy?
I agree with a lot of the comments that have been made about verifiability, boundary, terminology. I would add two additional comments when it comes to terminology. We use in here, and I think investors versus accountants use the term business model and long-term investment a little bit differently. For accountants, that can connote a carrying value. Maybe it shouldn't, but it can. And so I think how that term is used, I think, is important to consider. I think when it comes to just to reacting on the risks, you know, one of the things that I am always surprised by when I hear how people are using ESG information and they're doing it for risk screening, and I hear, like at the SASB conference, they're going through this looking for risks, and there's people from SEC Corp Fin, and you're like, well, why am I looking for risks in this document? Why aren't they already in the SEC document? Mm-hmm. And just to react comment to the comment on MD&A, the struggle that I think that investors have is the MD&A, at least in U.S. companies, comes after the earnings release. And so the earnings release is what the market reacts to. The MD&A comes later. And so the earnings release is what investors generally get. And that's what they're reacting to. So just a couple of observations there. But one thing that strikes me is that we're talking about why we need to update this, and we're talking about the boundary, and we're talking about other new information. But it seems to me, and this is a practice statement, it's not a standard, that there needs to be some sort of acknowledgement that this involves the engagement of other than just accountants. That there are a whole other series of people involved in this process. And having lived as a preparer through the financial crisis, when all the risks became realities, you had to explain to people, we need to explain how these manifested themselves. And that didn't come from my department, who was preparing the financial statements. And I had to pull people in. And I think that's even more prevalent in the production of ESG information. And to me, I think that there needs to be an acknowledgement in this document that many of these objectives involve people with throughout the organization that have different knowledge, because the people sitting in the financial reporting group, they sit through the financial reviews, but they're not in the field and they don't understand every risk every day. So I think an acknowledgement of that, which I think integrated reporting to some degree in its stuff acknowledges the involvement of a group of people, I think that that's important to include.
Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Oh, Marek, sorry.
Sorry, no problem.
I got confused.
It means the same thing, in fact.
Different language.
Just said differently. Thank you. And I really just wanted to start by saying that I will give my comments from the perspective of an assurance standard setter. So hopefully that sets the scene. I wanted to just say also that I'm chairing a project at the IAASB which is looking at assurance over what on your slide 3 would cover everything in that slide, basically. And so I understand the desire and need to find some boundaries within the two bubbles that you have. But I think that I would then look at page 11 and comment on a few things. I'm very pleased that you are being guided by the conceptual framework. I'd be surprised if you weren't. But I think that's very helpful because it gives a real focus that will help assurance or relate very well to assurance concepts too. The second thing that I wanted to comment on is the objective. I think the way in which it's described at a high level, certainly on page 11, with some more detail behind that in terms of assessing prospects for cash flows and stewardship of resources, contains the two really critical elements that I think an assurance practitioner will need, which are the user and the use of the report. From that, many things can be deduced. The next point on this slide that I wanted to pick up, many people have already commented on some of the enhancing qualitative characteristics. My comments are somewhat similar. I really think that from an assurance point of view, verifiability is fundamental, but I think that's also true for users. So I think those two points come together. And I'm surprised in a sense that there isn't a tick on it, but maybe it's just that it's fundamental to everything, but I would have expected that. And the other area where I was looking for a tick was understandability. Some people have mentioned aspects of that already, including conciseness and coherence or connectivity, if that is part of that. I'm not sure if it is. And one of the questions that we've been looking at is in looking at different frameworks, looking at the words people use in those frameworks, trying to relate them back to these four qualitative enhancing qualitative characteristics. Is there actually something that's different from those that applies in relation to management commentary? Is connectivity another one like comparability, which relates to more than one piece of information? I'm not sure, but it seems to me that's a question that's worth asking. In other words, guided by the conceptual framework, but are there things that are different that you need to pick up in looking at these? If we look at page 10, I was looking at streams 2 and 3, and I was also, like some others have commented, I was looking for purpose as sort of fundamental context for the dark blue box in streams 2 and 3. It seems to me that is pretty important and does come back to the verifiability question as well. And maybe just say a little, couple of words about verifiability. The first is that it's not just the point that I think Ben first made about is the individual piece of information verifiable? Is it reasonably capable of reasonably consistent derivation from the facts? But also in terms of boundaries, and we talked about boundaries quite a lot already in this conversation, but the boundary here is not necessarily that easy to set, even though you can draw a nice picture with broader financial reporting and the wider corporate reporting. I think what we know is that many of the things that happen to be important in the wider corporate reporting, insofar as they have an impact in society, etc., they may have a feedback effect on things that are actually important to financial reporting. And so understanding those boundaries is quite important. One example of that for me, or two examples perhaps of that for me, are the focus on prospects for cash flows. I just wonder if that includes the impact of information on the weighted average cost of capital for an entity. it seems to me that if you simply look at the cash flows themselves and the risks around those cash flows and so on, you're missing many of the things that could impact on investor decisions to buy and sell. So even if the decision is that that is not intended to be included, I think it's just as important to say why it's not, that it's not, first of all, why it's not, and what the implications of that are for the information content of the report. The other area that's a little bit like that is in relation to the stewardship question. When I looked at slide 10, I was sort of looking in the streams for governance and stewardship and not really seeing quite where that's intended to be dealt with. But in many ways, I think governance and stewardship actually sit above the items in the dark blue box. They sit with purpose and, in effect, almost come before purpose, because governance and stewardship are about the mind and soul and thinking, if you like, of the entity. And they're going to set the business model, they're going to set the strategy, they're going to create all those things. I also don't really entirely see where the culture fits in here. It'd be helpful to see where you think the culture will fit in. Mm-hmm. Does it fit in there in the governance and stewardship? Is it something you think sits in operational? I'm not sure that's right, but it would be helpful to understand some of those things. And I think those will contribute to verifiability, so that's why I raised them, because if you're going to be sure that this report can be repeated by different people, then you need to understand how. Thank you.
Rodrigo?
Well, I've got a couple of comments. First of all, in terms of conciseness and the discussion we've been having with respect to geography / boundaries, I think one thing we could explore more is item 112C from IAS1, where we say that the notes should provide information that is important to explain in the financial statement. So I think this boundary between what should be in the notes and what should be outside is also important for the discussion. And this has been also discussed about the benefit of being audited, as long as it's auditable information, of course. And this would be a benefit for the users. In terms of long-term value creation, I wonder if you think about providing some kind of guidance in terms of importance or prominence of short-term, medium-term, and long-term information. Do you think about addressing that in some way? With respect to coherence, I just wonder if it's necessary to expand a little bit more than just saying that it's the complete story, but saying that it's feasible or meaningful somehow, that it's logical somehow, something that Bruce has also mentioned. And with respect to risk management, I definitely agree that it's a little bit lost in time. Everything should be more and more separates and given more importance. I also don't see any specific mention about earnings quality and variability, which is also relevant. So this is something I was expecting to see. And finally, I think we'll have time to discuss this later, but I definitely agree with Lisa's point with respect to the importance of balance on neutrality. So this should be definitely expanded.
Okay. Well, you've certainly given us a lot to chew on. We should have a break of minus 15 minutes because we're until I think you've peeked ahead to a lot of the discussions that will follow later on. So that's why it's absolutely no problem that we took a little bit more time for opening salvos. Let's break until 10 past 11.